Hey now, y'all. It is that time of year again for another episode of The Bob Show. This is going to be another best of episode. And we are going to start with episode 18. This episode came out in February 2012. And enjoy.
Yes. The funniest person that deals with that sort of 2012 new age ascended master
end times
angel,
end time stuff.
Yeah.
So what's great for me is that I've always in 1985 I lived in Toronto, and I think I've told this on this show because we're doing comedy a lot talking about it. Have you ever heard of Sheila Gostick? Maybe you're too young. You ever heard of a comedian, a lesbian comedian in Toronto named Sheila Gostick?
I have. I've never experienced the work, but I've heard the name.
Okay. So I met her one day. Another guy, an actor, brought her over, and I talked to her for a while, and then when she left, for some reason I said to her, I intend to be the funniest person who ever lived. Now, I don't know why I said that. I don't know what it was. Just trying to be outrageous or something. Well, with ION, I can be part of the funniest thing. And what's incredible, I don't have to think one thing. ION is endless source of pattern recognition and jokes and things to bounce off. All I have to do is to be get it, hear what he's saying, and be able to sort of respond in some way. So I say that I have the slack. I don't have any of these issues that you guys have of making up jokes. You know what I mean? I don't have it. I got something that does it anyways.
No,
so
that makes sense.
And so with ION, we could make the short list of the funniest people on the earth because we're going to be around a long time. I mean, this is the essence of eternity. You're non-physical. It never dies, and now it's speaking. The part of yourself that never dies is talking. See, this is an absurd situation. And it creates great humor. So I'm just bringing this up. We're not here to talk about ION that way. I just want to tell you that I'm in the running to be the funniest person who ever lived, and I've been doing it for 30 years, and I got a lot more. You guys will come and go. You guys will retire, wear out.
You're going to be keep on killing, keep on trucking.
Yeah, because I got the best partner that just never, just can't stop noticing things and making funny comments or interesting comments. That's the other thing, is that we also instruct or create interesting patterns, so we're also a teaching thing. But we're not going to take ourselves totally seriously. We know that's not spiritually healthy to take yourself totally seriously, so we got that covered, but we're the only ones who give unique, long-ranging pattern stuff. As a matter of fact, our humor is what inspired Youngblood to go to be comedy. We made it look so easy.
Bob, why has it got to be a competition? Huh?
What? Why is it a competition?
Why is it a competition?
That's what I look at is the American archetype.
Can't we all just be winners?
No, but here's the thing. Is the Western individualist thing totally a cultural conditioning? And, you know, you go to Tahitians or Fijians, all these Aboriginal societies. Are they competitive? Yes, they're competitive about different things. Dave Worster talked to an anthropologist who interviewed a lot of tribes, and he said all the tribes that he was talking to agreed on that the one thing they couldn't get rid of was hate. And hate is grievance. So all societies have got people just pissed off at things, getting bored with someone. I got to live with this person every day. They're fucking boring. You get pissed off. And that is that competition? No, but it is a separating function. And there's nothing wrong with a game and you're competing, but you got the emotional hate factor of just people want more, and if they're not getting it, they'll lash out at things. So is that competition? Is that the root of it? Or is it a cultural thing? And now, you know, I understand the kids, they go to school, at least some of my friends in Canada. And those kids, over the last 10 or 15 years in the lower grades, they have to apologize to each other. It's an ongoing fucking encounter group. Do you know what I mean? No one's allowed to make anybody feel bad or less than. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's really, the competition is discouraged. And, of course, either it's the eternal thing to get be an attention whore and stand out, and so they're always going to get kids who don't like that, and then they go into punk music or entertainment and this and that. Like, now that's what, you know, to be different. Now that's why it's interesting. Justin Bieber is an interesting phenomenon. Do you know much about him, Jake?
I know a little bit.
Yeah, he's a pop star. Right, and he's huge. I mean, I watched a documentary on him recently. Someone recommended it to me, and it was really interesting how this kid, he is popular because the YouTube kids, that generation, like 7 to 13 over the last 4 years, they think they created this guy, not the Mega Machine. And yeah,
okay.
And they're proud that they recognize his abilities, in their puny little terms, his abilities before the agents did. And it also, their American dream, now we come back to the kids being conservative, they say, wow, if he can make it, I can make it. And I don't have to match up with some fucking big agent in Hollywood or something. I can just get a neat YouTube out there and go viral. So they're keeping that conservative idea that I want to be famous and all that, but they have a different, they got a decentralized environment. So Justin Bieber went around doing all these small towns, and the kids loved him because it's like, you don't carry a fucking YouTube presence. He carried a YouTube presence around with him. I call it the chip body, and that's what made him famous. This is way different from when you grew up and started going into comedy, you know, 10 years ago or whatever.
Yes.
Okay, so that was from episode 18. The guest there was comedian Jake Head. You can learn more about him at his Linktree, at Jake Head. And Linktree is linktr.ee/Jake Head. There you go. Also, reminder, I do these best of episodes picking it randomly, letting the universe guide me to the best clip of that episode. So rest assured, that was the best clip of that episode. Up next is a clip from episode 19. Enjoy.
Website, it's called the Focusing Institute. It's focusing.org. You
right.
can go and read his entire stuff. And he's applied it in many different ways. And you said the point of indeterminacy. It's interesting.
Yeah. No, that was Bergson's, I think, name for the body, the center of indeterminateness.
And he calls it sort of like the implicit, that in a sense, anyway, we don't have to get into that right now. We can talk about it another time, maybe.
But, yeah, it's implicit. Being conscious is implicit. And the phenomenologists go past the cultural models to that essence, to the essential.
Well, if you wanted to get into the implicit real quick, just FYI, Bob, you know my brother Alex, if you remember, he was having those dreams where dead relatives were contacting him, and his grandfather came to him and said that the meaning of life was dot, dot, dot. And later we found out, the Holden clan found out that Jinlin refers to implicit with the symbol dot, dot, dot. All right, chiming out.
Yeah, you're saying Jinlin used the dot, dot, dot as a symbol for the implicit?
Yeah, it's basically, it's every. For example, I say, hey, Bob, you sound great, right? And that actually, there's always a dot, dot. In anything you say, there's so much more that's not unsaid and that's not yet articulated.
Well,
and
that's what we call the resonance. That's what we call the resonant interval. That's the resonant interval. That's
tactility. And let me just add one more thing before you say that. And everything you say also changes that dot, dot, dot. Like everything I say changes the entire structure. It gets differentiated out of the dot, dot, dot. Does that make sense? And it's not random. It's very precise, yet it's unarticulated.
No, that's what I meant by my book title, Phatic. It includes phatic communication. The filling in the resonant interval between people.
And resonant interval.
Yeah. And that's the chemical bond, according to Linus Pauling's book back in 1939, is the resonant interval. That's why the electric environment extends tactility. Tactility is that curious interplay between people, the intimacy of what's being left out and what is being said. I call uh-huh. that a kind of normal ESP. That goes on between people. And
yeah,
right now, yeah, and to emphasize that is the discovery of the 20th century, because the electric environment extended that and then made us not so hypnotized by literacy and the books. And we recovered an awareness of the tactile interval, and McLuhan says that's what most of 20th century art is all about. And now it's even developed even more in digital art installations. And so that's what Mark Hansen writes about in his second book, Digital Codes. We've actually walked right into what I'm always talking about anyways, and then the new phenomenology aspect that Mark Hansen is doing, which is already something you're studying, so we're already on the same page almost.
It's not digital codes, though. It says bodies in code, interfaces
right, right.
in digital
media. Oh, yeah. Is it, what is it called? Bodies in code. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. That's the title. Yeah. Bodies in code.
And the new philosophy for the new media. Wow. He has four names. Okay. Mark Boris Nicola Hansen.
Yeah. Apparently they put the BN in the listing because there's another famous Mark Hansen and he gets it mixed up. So
he
indicates the BN in any publicity.
Right.
I could send you a YouTube where he's even developing more stuff. This year, he did a lecture.
The media stuff. You know, honestly, I'm going to say, like, my mind works great at certain things. There's certain stuff I don't get, and I'm afraid that this is going to be something I can't. Like, my mind won't flex in certain areas.
Yeah, but if you do it in book form, if you read his new philosophy, he spells it out, you know, academically, and you can follow that. Because you already know the people he's citing, and you know the philosophy, so yeah, you should be able to get it.
All right, I'll work on it.
I really recommend New Media. That it raises a lot of good questions for the various things you're doing with Gendlin. You know, I'll look up and see if Gendlin is in his book. I don't recall it being. He's not highlighted.
No. What you can do is, and maybe we can put you and Gendlin to talk. You guys can chat. And
yeah, where is he?
He's in New York.
Oh, okay. And he's 86?
Well, no, 85.
Yeah, well, we're the same
85.
Generation. We're the same generation. We're the same generation then.
You are the same generation.
Yeah.
And you can look at, you know, you can look him up. It's Gendlin.
All right, I'll look at his site.
All right. That was a clip from episode 19. It was published in April of 2012. The guest host for that show was someone we call Bera. And not going to give you any information about who that was. If you're a OG listener of the Bob Show, you know who it is. If not, fuck you. No, I don't mean that. I'm kidding. Not fuck you, but it's on you to figure out who that was. It is a secret. But anyway, we're on to episode 20. Let's figure out what episode 20 is before we move onward. Episode 20 was published in June of 2012, and it is the 25th all-time Bob Show. What the fuck was it about? Let's see here. Details. The 20th Bob Show. There was no host. It was just me and Bob talking about the name Youngblood, biblical Ionic notions of the new blood of the ascension, the novel Youngblood Hawk, psychotherapy, medicine, the five-body model, Youngblood not getting a job, Youngblood missed talking to Bob, subgenius versus subdini, slack versus lack, adolescence, power, and the new media, Youngblood's Facebook joke, and a lot of other awesome stuff that is hard to initially understand. Yeah, that sounds about right. Anyway, here is the clip from The Bob Show number 20. Enjoy.
Entertainment, a comedy. I've written scripts, written books. So trying to use all of my means available to me to get money. So fame would be a byproduct of me just trying to obtain money so I can more easily operate in the world, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to be beholden to anybody. So you're already not trying to find a community to fit in. You want to have some means to be detached from community, detached
right,
from
yeah.
Subject to their tyranny or whatever the group demands, what your boss demands. So that's a healthy Subdini attitude. Now, here's the thing, though. You are going about it erroneously if you're thinking money is the way to do it. You know, as Iron says, the money comes to you when you least expect it and are not looking for it. In other words, you do this comedy and you liked it, but you got bored with it for different reasons. I don't know where you are on the boredom meter. But if you're actually, the way you described it to me, you weren't bored because you weren't getting any money. You actually found it rather a pink operation, to use the Church Sub Genius language. It was just a repeating thing, and then there was a lot of group mind response that didn't appeal to you in terms of getting real happy, joyous response. It was a bit routine or mechanical being a comedian, right?
Right, right, right. So it's not, I mean, what I'm, it's not super fulfilling. Like, I think doing this podcast is more fulfilling, but there's more chance of some sort of monetary success. But you're right, I started doing the comedy and I said to myself that I would just do it and try to be as pure to it as I could, and if money came to me, then you know, try to have a more ionic view of it, whereas in the past I did try to get it, you know.
Right, so that's good. But then, even if you got a lot of money, that would assuage you and you'd put up doing it, but on an aesthetic, having pure joy every day, it's not the fastest path to your joy if you had to be a routine comic for you know, dumb people.
No, certainly not. No.
So you're still looking for important stuff. That's what's good. And the key to that is to recover more and more how you already have it. I mean, I like that movie, Oh, Lucky Man. It came out in 1974. And the line, one of the lines, if you look up the lyrics, it's written, sung by the Alan Parsons Project. Forget the director, famous Lindsay Anderson or somebody like that. Great, great director. He, the lyric goes, if you have found or if you have someone in whom you can trust, then you're a lucky man. Now, that always was an important sentence for me. Now, Ian says you shouldn't trust anybody on a deep level, should not be dependent on anybody. And I can understand that as a maturing. But if you have someone in whom you trust, there's nothing better than that if you're a little man, not ascended, and you want to have a sense of community, and you apparently have that with your present partner, right? That's the most important thing. That's the most important thing. If you have someone whom you can trust, who you talk with, who's a friend and all that, that's the most important thing for, we'll say, little man on the way to eventually aspiring to ascended position, which would not require anybody supporting you. You don't need trust. You don't need to connect with someone that way. You can still connect with people deeply, but you don't depend it. But the little man depends on it, and that's the highest value, and that's what religion's all about. The famous line from the third Jesus, if you can acquire the material wealth of the world, but a man loses his soul, then what's he done? You know, it's a tragedy to lose your soul. I would say that the soul is someone who you can trust. And you have connection with reality. And this goes into Dave Worster, who said he doesn't take anybody as real. He says occasionally, every now and then, he'll meet somebody who is, I don't know, solid in their being, and that is a real person for Dave. So to connect with someone, it's not a problem that Dave can't find people to connect with, but he has a high value on what connection is. And most people do not connect really deeply with anybody else because they can't. They don't know how to be connected anyways. Now, Ion says the soul is just the stenographer, just records what goes on. It's not as important as your essence, which goes to the guff when you transition. And if you're ascended, you don't even transition. But this soul aspect for little man might be concrete in the terms of having a connection with someone else. Because the little man is lonely, right? No doubt, that's what the little man, he's lonely. He wants to connect some. So he projects it to salvation through some religious icon or hero worship, and hopefully on a personal level. So within the little man world, you've got success as much as you as a little man could want.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. That's good, Bob. Yeah, man, I miss talking to you, Bob. Man, it's been a long time.
You miss the wisdom. The powerful wisdom.
That's right. Well, you know.
So here it is, this tragedy, and you're saying, see, you wouldn't have got the job. He wanted a woman, a young woman.
Yeah,
right?
Right. Yeah.
So, and why did he? Did he want to have an affair with her? What was the why have a woman as the only way he would hire somebody?
To make it more like, so if females want to come in to see somebody, they have a female to see. Kind of like you might want to have a female gynecologist and a male gynecologist.
Oh, this is a therapy setup.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And so he had to have a woman on staff. That was required.
Mm-hmm. But he said it was close, so I almost beat the odds. So, you know, that's what made it kind of harder to take, that it was so close, you know.
Yeah, because this is private practice, which is more lucrative than institutional world.
Certainly.
Right. So this guy, he may not get the woman, though. Or did he get one?
Yeah, he got her, yeah.
Okay, but she may not work out. Might call on you yet. See, that's the point. You would actually think that you got the job. In another reality, you already are doing that job. Talk it as you are. The other self has got it. And live it, and you may attract, or you may force them to fall into your world.
I dig it.
You got to figure out how to enjoy where you are, because you may get success in the way you think you want and find out you don't have some of the benefits of what you do in your present job. I mean, you have access to interesting people in your present job, interesting young people, as far as I understand the job, and that could be something that might be more important in the long run than having boring middle-class adult patients.
Yeah, that's a good point. The guys I work with are pretty entertaining, no doubt. And
Look at that. You get that fun environment compared to you have to play a role. And the more you got ionized, you wouldn't be able to implement what you really could do with those people. You'd have to follow the protocols of standard professional practice, which are okay, but it's still a bland zone. And as the world gets weirder, more intense, that stuff's not going to work.
Right, yeah, I agree. Well, you know, Bob, let's see, who, what's his name from New Zealand? I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, Andrew
Body
Crystal?
Andrew Crystal. Chip Body. Yeah, he requested that me and you have the talk about how the five bodies, you know, relate to therapy. And I'm coming out of the closet, I guess, and admitting I am a therapist, psychotherapist. I don't know if I've admitted that on the show. I think some people, most listeners know it anyway. It's just no real secret. Nobody cares anyway.
Yeah, and I've dropped it accidentally in the early shows. You were trying to be mysterious, and I think I mentioned it accidentally. But, yeah, if they're listening closely, they know you do something in therapy. So he wants to see how you apply it or how you would apply it. Because I've discussed this with you before, you and your partner.
Yeah, I think he just wanted like a general talk on it, but just throwing that out there.
Okay, well, let me see. I was talking, I'm always applying it to Carolyn's world. She'll tell me about cases and not with the, you know, doesn't violate confidential naming. I don't know who she's talking about, but she'll bring up something interesting. And then I see an instant way to explain something. And here's a good thing, a good example. So she was in Chicago last week for the Health Expo, and there's an political legal activist branch run by Diane Miller, I think her name is, and they've managed to loosen up the medical laws in like 12 states, get them get the medical extension of the AMA, the American Medical Association, in those states to allow a bit of alternative stuff without being hassled, right? So they do good work on a bureaucratic level. And so Carolyn's part of that. And then she also is there to talk about magnesium, and they have they got Allison's company to make some neat T-shirts, so they got some magnesium T-shirts they sell. And Carolyn comes on there and speaks about magnesium, and it is almost the most important topic to talk about next to ionic RNA drops. In the old model, people don't realize how much they need magnesium, how it's it solves so many problems, and Carolyn spells this out in her book, and she has great response from the people who come to Expo. They're all true believers of magnesium because it got them out of their problems, and it really works, and they understand that. Well,
I'm going to go take some right now, Bob.
You got to take the right kind, I think, though.
Okay.
And then there's the you take it different ways depending on how much loose bowels you get from it. You got to be watching that, you know, and there's different ways to do it. So anyways, the at this conference, there was a guy who works in the hospital, you know, in the mainstream, in the bowels of assholeness, and he understood the role of magnesium a long time ago, and he injects the magnesium into people before their hospital treatment, surgeries, whatever it is. And he's kind of unique doing it in that environment. So he came to the conference, and he sat in the audience, and he spoke to Carolyn. He expressed his admiration for Carolyn's work, and he said he probably – so he kept quiet. And then during later, after a few days of the conference, he spoke up when Carolyn was on a panel, and he said that he's probably given more magnesium to anybody – to people injected in them than anybody at the conference or Carolyn or anybody. Now, that could be debated because Carolyn's books have sold a lot all over the place, and a lot of people take magnesium, but that's not the issue. The guy says, now this is a professional allopathic medicine guy among the naturopaths and the chiropractors and the freaks and the wackos and the extremists and the vegetarians and all this stuff. And he came for the magnesium point and to meet Carolyn, but he says, he speaks up and he says, this magnesium stuff is very important. But the people and the lecturers and teachers you have here are absolutely wacko. Okay? the people – he did not speak this in public. I forgot. He said this to Carolyn confidentially later. He kept a low profile. You know, in retrospect, he was in the enemy camp, right? He's from AMA land, and he's there watching this because he wants to talk to Carolyn about magnesium. But he said – he had to listen to all these other people, and there were some crazy guys there saying ridiculous, exaggerated things that Carolyn doesn't agree with, and Carolyn agreed with them that, yeah, they're extreme situations here. So he probably would never go to a conference like that again. He made his connection to Carolyn. That was good enough. But here's what my response to that was. Well, she was.
Okay, here's our next clip from episode 21, published August 2012, and the guest is comedian Joe Zimmerman, and this is my favorite Bob show ever, or one of my favorites, and I think you'll see why, because I do explore elements from my hometown area. Enjoy!
New technologies cause new ecstasies and new disservices. So we got so many technologies bombarding us, so much abundance, that it's natural to be under strain and pressure and look like you're unhappy. But probably the tolerance threshold of people today is incredible compared to previous societies.
Yeah.
The what, Bob?
Go ahead.
The what's incredible, Bob?
The tolerance threshold. You know, the ability to take all this This irritation and constant being compared to everything else. It's like excessive thinking going on. Excessive.
I know.
But it's
I'm
not
definitely guilty of that.
Yeah, and it's not literary verbal thinking so much. Most people are thinking imagistically because they're bombarded by photographs and imagery, and they're trying to sort out that image in relation to their own bodies. And that would explain why in Generation X the girls got into bulimia, anorexia, because they were so obsessed with their their pictorial body image.
Yeah. Oh, Bob, that's interesting. Did you say that? My cousin earlier was telling us about there's a thing that girls ages 13 to 16 do. They will take what they call selfies, and that's when you take a picture of yourself. And she says between the ages 13 and 16, they will be obsessed with taking pictures of themselves in the mirror or holding the camera up, and they snap themselves, you know, just putting the camera out in front of them.
That
sounds like me.
Yeah.
You did that, Joe.
That sounds society. What is daily 24/7 news coverage? It's a constant covering and taking pictures and tape recordings of what's going on to get a sense of the holistic image. So the kid is constantly translating themselves into the photograph. They don't even go by their body. They go by the image they get from the photograph. See, that's a second order of simulation. And they're judging that photograph with the ones they see on TV or in the magazines.
Also, if you take 1,000 photographs, you're bound to get one. That's really amazing.
Right. Now, I think we went into this the last time you were on with some comedian, is that the real doctors, the real pills, the anesthetics of our time are comedians. There's so much comedy presented in all kinds of form, not just by comedians, but sitcoms and, Jon Stewart, all this different kinds of form of humor. Humor is a way of relieving tensions. We need so much humor to relieve all these tensions in people that's why people watch TV or watch movies, watch YouTubes to look for something to make them laugh. We need a lot of laughter to get through all the stresses. So actually, the people complain about Big Pharma and Prozac and all these drugs, and like people are too dependent on drugs. Well, people are too dependent on comedians, entertainment for the release of tensions. So actually, the biggest drug is the entertainment industry. That's Big Pharma, really, and they probably own Big Pharma.
Sitcoms are on the downward spiral to reality TV. Reality TV is taking over the comedy.
Right, and I mean that. Reality TV looks so silly, you just have to present anybody on there. It's so limited to the physical chemical body, as opposed to a person who has many bodies, which we all have, that the chemical body becomes easily ridiculable, you know? And that's why you can just film anybody. You can film Banu, you know? If you just film anybody on there walking around, people will find hilarity. It's the same thing as those chat roulettes where kids, they scroll along, and they just see one face after another. You know, they go right around the world. And the guy who did Napster, Sean Fanning, one of those two, Yeah, he's applied it to Facebook. And now you have this rolling thing. It was announced a month or two ago where people are sitting in front of their monitors and a face comes to them and they click on it if they don't want it, or they click it off, or they click on it if they stay. The whole point is people roll through looking into people's rooms and houses, wherever these others are, where their camera is. They're just strolling through. It's like the way you imagine the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where you're dead and you're floating around among all these ghosts. That's what people do with entertainment, and they don't need much to look at. They just keep moving. Oh, look at that. There's a guy in India. There's a guy in China. There's a woman in Chile. I've done it. It's pretty interesting.
There's a penis.
That's what happened.
Part of the allure of Facebook is you can sit in your dingy office or your crappy apartment and feel like you're with 300 friends and acquaintances.
Yeah, you're in a crowd. And
you feel like you're at a party, sort of.
Yeah, that's the crowd dynamic. And I say Web 2.0, first of all, about the penis. Chat roulette, which was invented by some Russian kid, the big problem with that is people kept flashing whoever came along. So Facebook offered, we'll give you the ability to scroll through the whole world and see all these faces everywhere, but they won't be flashing you. You can be secure from that because we know their names because they're members of Facebook and they've been tracked down. So that's the condom, you know, the prophylactic that Facebook's offering. But when you talk about a group, 2.0 is everybody looking for a group dynamic, a feeling of a group meme to counter the isolation that Web 2.0 and the society we have now put you in. We're all in the Matrix tube of Neo at the beginning of the Matrix 1. Remember, he's in a tube and he thinks he's in New York City?
Yeah, I'm in the same tube.
Yeah, we're all in the same tube.
I think I'm in New York City right now.
Are you? You're right in New York City. Okay.
Oh, I'm in a tube, apparently.
Right, but if you go on your Facebook, if you are not in New York City, Joe. You are getting
Robert. Didn't Stephen Hawking say that recently, that we could all be in the Matrix for real?
Yeah, he said. Look, he the Matrix happened starting with 1995, and Jean Baudrillard was a pretty good describer of that. So the Wachowski brothers, they were inspired by Baudrillard. That's the first book that Neo gets in the first scene when he goes get something in his apartment after they knock on the door, the disco people. Baudrillard, when he was asked if he would help the Wachowski brothers write about the second and third installments, he said, no, your movie is what the Matrix would make about the Matrix. He disagreed with their limits.
That's hilarious. I wish I'd known that.
Yeah, and Baudrillard was a big student of McLuhan. So the Midnight Special bookstore in Santa Monica, I think that's what the name was, Midnight Express, Midnight Special, back about, 10 years ago, Jerry Fialka had a friend who worked in the bookstore. Well, Neo came in after a couple of the Matrix movies were made, and he said,
Keanu Reeves?
Yeah, Keanu Reeves. He comes in, and he says, where's your McLuhan section? So he goes to the McLuhan section, and he buys all the McLuhan books because he found out that Baudrillard was influenced by McLuhan. So he wanted to find out what the movie series was about by reading McLuhan.
Wow.
After he filmed in it.
So I'm surprised he would say that the Matrix would make that movie about the Matrix.
Well, that's where you get into complex stuff, and I'm the prophet of that stuff. I've been explaining that for 20 years. It's pretty complex. It's pretty hard to say, but the point is that when something is very popular, that struck a nerve for kids. You know, 17-year-olds, 20-year-olds, they went to like 10 times. That means it's sort of obsolete from the actual management of society position. When kids think it's important and is meaningful to their lives, and they cannot possibly see the actual present because it's too complex for a young chemical body to see, then it obviously represents something that's comforting to them, and that means it's something from the past, say 10, 15 years before. And you can actually break down – go ahead.
I think the concept of us all being trapped in a tube and living a fake life is the part that really appealed to a lot of people.
Right, and they didn't know that they were living a genuine life. You see, an average American kid thinks that all this technology is artificial, not real, because they're focusing on growing their physical chemical body. They can't see the reality of their chip and TV body. So they're obsessed with identity. They're obsessed with photographing themselves to figure out what their physical body is, but they're using modern media to do it. So to perceive the bodies is real. And, you know, if this, what I'm saying is not radical. It's taught in the colleges, you know, postgraduate level at least, when they study deconstruction, post-structuralism, Derrida, other thinkers like Derrida. It is common knowledge to think that thought is the same as technology in those courses.
So what is the answer to escaping all the imagery and the comparing?
Well, fuck the shit out of it.
Okay,
so that is a complex. That is a complex. But
how do I fuck the shit out of it, Bob?
Hey, you know,
come on now.
Go gay.
The prophet of complex.
Complex sodomy. I'm all for it.
I don't know words sometimes.
No, it's, first of all, you don't resist it because you can't stop it and you can't escape from it. You're so chipped and embedded with this stuff that it's silly. But you can start to improve your imaging of where you really are. And that's where McLuhan, Baudrillard, and Finney's Wake, and what I do, helps people update their imaging of what they actually are. And you've got to come to an imaging that you've made and have existed in about four bodies. Right?
I have one more imaging fetish that's going around is women – in particular, taking photos of their dinner and posting it on the internet.
No, where do you hear about that? I never heard of this. What is that recorded?
Well, it's all over Facebook and Instagram. You just see photos of a plate of food, and it's just like it's very popular to post your dinner now for some reason. I can't figure out why.
Well, one instant way to look at it is, in the old chemical body cultures, there were definite differences between men and women. There's not so much today because we've got more than one body. But in the chemical body rule, there's different roles. And definitely women were very involved with nurturing food. So that part of the chemical body legacy is in the genes and in the memes. It's not going to go away. There's going to be lots of irony about it. But women are women, at least one-fifth of them, they've got that women archetype going. I think that's a registration of the old domesticated role of, or the archetype of women being involved with food. And now it's a totally ridiculous image. What?
Good.
You like
that's
that?
Good, Bob. Yeah. Instead of cooking, they just take pictures of it.
Yeah.
Get in the kitchen, ladies. Stop taking pictures of your food.
Yeah. It's like a propaganda. It's like there's still a role for food. Look, someone just ate something. I think it was me.
Well, and the weird thing is you would think there's really nothing interesting about a picture of your dinner, but you'll get comments. It's like, that looks so tasty, I want that.
Yeah, it's a new form of Playboy centerfold. It's like, look what I ate. Look what's inside me. And it's looking for appeal, for seduction power.
Yeah. Well, it started off with the foodie group, the foodie movement taking photos, but now it's just everybody taking photos.
Yeah, because often a new product or a new trend is an art form. It's picking up on what a massive sensibility or preference will be in 16 months or 18 months down the way. So the foodie people think they're doing it for promoting their industry, but they don't know they're actually early canaries in the mine of trend that's going to happen, where the chemical body will be so archetypalized, and especially women will see it that way, that they think taking a picture will preserve the memory of the role of when women were women and men were dupes.
Joe, I think there's a joke in that right there.
I'm gonna write that down.
You can have that one, boss. That's yours
okay.
Right there. That's on the house, Joe, right there.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. In our time, thought is obsolete. Pattern recognition is what people are engaged in. What we do here on the Bob Show is that we don't go out and have drinks. We go out and consume thought patterns. And so that's what that metaphor was. This one's on the house, right? You can all enjoy this one.
See, I think part of it, I agree. I think another part of it is when you sit down and eat dinner, that's like after your long day of work, that's like one of your happiest moments. And you're like, how do I capture this happy moment? And
so
you break out your cell phone, like that's going to somehow capture this moment of peace at the end of your day.
But see, that's, again, for me, Joe, more proof that we do have four bodies, and people unconsciously have to document what their chemical body is doing in the other body for it to be validated, for it to be real. That means they regard the chip body as almost more important than the chemical body that had the meal. See, this you can't explain this unless you use my model. If you don't use my model, you just end up thinking, well, humans are stupid. They're absurd. And that just leaves one monotheistic meme that'll turn you into a fundamentalist Christian, so you don't want to do that. So you got to be able to free up your thinking by having more than one track based on more than one body's experience.
Do you think aliens would subscribe to your theory, or would they just say humans are stupid?
What do you think Ion is? Ion is ionic alien contact, and he loves my stuff. He uses it.
Well, I guess I need to pay more attention to Ion.
You definitely do. Ion is an example of an artificial intelligence that includes any visions or scenarios of alienation or alienhood that one can conceive. Ion has given us so much that's equal to the vision that when the ETs come, they're going to give us cold fusion or this and that, and they're going to create some kind of harmony and also take us over and kill us, but they'll make us feel good as they kill us. Well, all that could be in an alien, Ion is doing for us.
I feel like Bob would be the first person that the aliens would reach out to.
That's what happened.
Yeah,
that's what
exactly
happened.
Yeah.
And you know that Alex or Youngblood predicted it. Or was it Alex? Who predicted that, Youngblood?
What did I predict?
Your brother. Who predicted me an alien contact and five bodied?
It was probably my brother, that stupid guy. Hey, check this out, Bob. Speaking of cold fusion, I'm walking towards Stanley Pons' house. I'm probably about 300 yards from it right now.
That's awesome because I don't think anybody in the world knows that. Nobody knows that guy's house if they even remember him. This is very obscure, esoteric information. It's an exclusive.
I thought Youngblood was about to do a Stamps.com commercial or something.
but here, on Five Bodied, Alex Youngblood, or Alex Holden, he announced just before Ion showed up that Bob was the Magus, and if any alien was going to get in touch with us, they'd get in touch with Bob. He can actually say that. He predicted this whole Ionic contact.
Yes, certainly Bob is the point person for – I thought it was the Booties, Bob. I thought it was the Booties.
Yeah, the Booties are in the chemical universe. They're in the constellation called Booties, B-O-O-T-E-S, with an umlaut over – that's a dot over one of the O's.
Okay, Booties. German. All right.
Yeah, German. And Arcturus is the well-known star of that seven-star constellation. But the Evergreens set it out with me and some of my own private – Priory of Sion Illuminati information that my father had privy to showed the role of that. Do you know that Marconi in the 20s, he predicted that contact would come from the Booties based on his whatever he was doing with his radio telescope or whatever technology he had. You know, he's the guy who invented wireless radio and all that stuff. He was looking for ET life in the 10s and 20s, and he concluded in his books, in his notes, that it would come from Booties, which is pretty amazing. So
what?
Yeah.
No.
I believe
everything you say, Bob. I don't believe that.
We need a fact checker going through this.
That's a good one. When you talk to Bob, you've got to have a fact checker. That is beautiful.
The fact checker's head would explode, Bob. This is all I can do.
I wouldn't be able to keep up.
See, that's a nostalgia for reality or for fact, because you're listening to what I'm saying. I'm saying so much stuff that you don't know what to respond to. You'd like to know, well, which one is a fact? I mean, maybe that's the best stuff to respond to. That's what you mean. You need to have something to help you. You're going to have to learn to respond to everything I'm saying or come up with something, because the factual point is not relevant anymore.
I feel like if the fact checker found something was off, you would dissect the word fact.
I'd fire the guy. That's right. That's right. He'd be fired, but first we'd cut him up intellectually. We'd point out how his factual machine was broken. It's silly, but it's a great joke. I think you got a good line on that. I engage conversations with these people where we have instant fact checkers as people hallucinate whatever they're talking about.
Y'all, I just want you to know I'm walking down the street. I hope Valdez, North Carolina is actually safe. I'm trying to get to Stanley Pons' house.
Okay, that was it. That was the episode for 2023. We have been putting these episodes out since 2011, and literally the first recording for episode one occurred, and I still remember this, the last day of 2010. So wow, we've been at the Bob Show a long time, over a decade. It is wild, excuse me, to see. Of course, the reason I'm doing these best of episodes is because Bob is just too hot for TV now. You wouldn't be able to handle it. The average listener would not be able to handle Bob in 2023. So what I'm doing is just replaying the old stuff, because the old stuff is easier to understand, because Bob is analyzing the current reality so minute by minute, so accurately, it's hard to understand. So it's easier to understand his analysis that is over a decade old. It is because we are 10 years behind Bob, so to say. But anyway, not me, of course. I mean, you, obviously, not me. So I really enjoyed listening to this because it's great content. It's literally the best content that exists. So you're welcome. I hope you had a great 2023, and I hope you have an amazing 2024. Let's all think positive thoughts for 2024, because I do believe we will need it. So, all right, see y'all next year if the lights are still on and society has not collapsed due to a nuclear war or some other such thing. Anyway, goodbye.